We have, over the last 2 days, been talking about various parables with the concept of windows into understanding. That's really what parables are. When Dan illustrates a particular point in his sermon, what an illustration is a window into the understanding of perhaps a very complicated biblical subject, or simply to help it stay within our minds. Parables do many things, actually, some of which is that Jesus wants our imagination to open up and to really consider several things that may be able to come forth, several lessons that may be able to come forth out of each of these parables. Today we're going to look at perhaps one of the favorite parables or favorite sets of parables that you can find in all of the Bible, and those have to do with the parables of the lost in Luke 15. Now, we often miss that first couple of verses in Luke 15, which really tells you why Jesus gave these parables. It says, "Now the tax collectors and the sinners were all drawing near to him, and the Pharisees and the scribes grumbled, saying, 'This man receives sinners and eats with them.'" And so immediately Jesus goes into this series of parables. Now this is such a lengthy reading, and we have just really a very short period of time, and so we're not going to read every word of Luke 15. But in the first parable that we're dealing with here, Jesus said, "What about if a man had 100 sheep and one of them wandered off? Would he not leave the 99 and go find that sheep and bring him back?" And so here you have a parable concerning something that is lost, something that knows that it is lost, but does not know how to get home. The second parable had to do with the lady who had lost some coins. And so she calls her neighbors, and they come and they help her to clean, and finally they find those coins. Now, in that picture that we have, and there are really so many subtle things in that picture. This is a widow lady, and so these were very, very important to her for some reason. But whatever the case is, these coins were lost. They did not know that they were lost, and they did not know their way home. Christ is slowly taking us through various levels of lostness and helping us to understand that some of our friends are lost and don't know that they're lost, and they don't know their way home. Some of our friends are lost, know they're lost, but don't know their way back. And then we come to the parable of the lost boy, or as we often call it, because of a word that's used within the context, the prodigal son. And this is a very lengthy text, but we're going to read portions of it. And he said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me.' And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all that he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living." Most texts here say prodigal living. And looking at A.T. Robertson's word pictures concerning this particular word, it means to sin in excess, to take sin to the limits. In other words, he wanted to do everything he could possibly do. And with that money, as far as wasting it and living in such an extremely sinful way, I think we get the picture here that his father would not have approved of this, and that the whole reason for his asking for his inheritance early was so that he could waste it in this way. And the Bible says, verse 14, "When he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in the country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed the pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, 'How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants.' And so he arose and came to his father." Now, we normally deal with the first half of this parable and often forget the second half of it, because the first half is so exciting. It is such a wonderful picture, such a great reunion, because this boy decides to go home. And again, the picture of a young man who comes to himself, again in A.T. Robertson's word pictures, A.T. Robertson said that it's like you were outside of yourself, living a way that you shouldn't be living, knowing in your conscience that's not the way you should be living, but you just completely destroy your conscience for a while, but then it comes back and you wake up and you realize, I am not myself. And the only way I can get back to being myself is to go home. And so he comes home, and as he's walking down that road, the Father sees him. And again, so many implications here. Jesus doesn't spell it all out because he wants our minds to be working while we're reading this. Why did the Father see him coming down the road? This is a man who was an agricultural individual. Well, my dad had a farm as well as worked at a job. And as soon as he got home from the job and we had supper, we had to go over to the place and start working on the farm. He rarely was just sitting on our front porch. That shows you just how important this boy was to this father, that he was leaving the work up apparently to his older son and to his workers while he waited to see if his son was ever going to come back. And then there's that one day. And the boy comes walking down the road. The father knows that it's his son. He goes running out. He does not wait. He is not thinking about how am I going to punish him? How am I going to get back at him for this which he has done, which has embarrassed me and embarrassed our family? None of that counts. He is simply concerned that the boy has come home. And so he runs out and he falls on his neck and he kisses him and he calls for the robe and he calls for the ring to put on his hands, shoes for his feet, the fattened calf to kill. And he says, let us celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Well, obviously here we're dealing with someone who is lost, who knows they are lost and who knows the way back. And so he comes to himself and he comes home to the Father. The big celebration begins to take place. But remember those first couple of verses about the Pharisees. The Pharisees have accused Jesus of spending time with Pharisees or with publicans and sinners. Publicans are tax collectors and sinners. Jesus then tears into these three parables in order to show them you should be more concerned with sinners. You need to be concerned about the lost. But there's one in this story who is not concerned about the lost. And that happens to be the older son. Verse 25, now his older son was in the field. As he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing. Now, I think we can assume that the father has turned a lot of the work over to him while this son was gone. He's grieving that his son is gone. He's waiting every day for him to return. So there's been a bit of a double burden probably on this older boy. We don't know that. But again, what does Jesus want us to do? These are windows into understanding. He wants our imaginations to not necessarily run wild, but he wants us to think about all of these things that may possibly have happened. But this young boy's out in the field. He's doing the work, and he hears this music. And he called one of the servants and asked him what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry. And he refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your command. Yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, now notice that. Doesn't call him his brother, does he? When that son of yours, now what happens when mama gets really, really mad and daddy perhaps has not straightened out the boys like they should? That son of yours, you know, she doesn't want to claim him right then. She's ready to break his neck. And so she wants daddy to go and straighten him out. And so this is not necessarily unusual language, but I believe even harsher in this situation because this is hatred between brothers. Now the other brother doesn't hate him. There's been no message of that in this great parable, but simply talking about the fact of how he felt. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. You know, I kind of wonder, why did he know that? Why did he know what his brother did? He went into a far country. They have a spy watching that young man? I don't know. Whatever the case is, his father has already forgotten all of this stuff while the brother is bringing it up. And that's, again, a picture of the Pharisees here and their attitude toward these that they considered prodigal, these that they considered having left the fold. Matthew was a tax collector. Matthew was a Jew, but he had kind of sold out. This is the picture that the Jews would have had toward him. He sold out to the Romans, and he's collecting taxes for the Romans. And so he's a Benedict Arnold. He's a traitor, and that's the way they viewed them. I don't know who they are referring to as far as what these people had done, these sinners that have come and have dined with Jesus or have sat around in Matthew's house with Jesus, as we see earlier in the book of Matthew, in Matthew chapter 9. But whatever kind of men they were, these Pharisees have placed themselves above them. And they are saying, we are better than they are. And Jesus shouldn't be wasting his time with these fellows. He ought to be spending his time with us. And that's the attitude that he has. But what has Jesus come to do? In Matthew 9, when he hears that, when they say concerning his going into Matthew's house and the sinners gathering around and Jesus teaching them there, Jesus immediately says to them, I did not come to the saved, but to the sinners. That was his job. And he understood his job. And so he wasn't going to stay there with the Pharisees and spend his time with them. But this young man begins to list what his brother has done. And he said to him, son, you are always with me. That's so key to understanding this parable. You are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and to be glad, for this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. Brother Wendell Winkler one time said, this is the saddest parable in all of the Bible because it just ends there. The curtain comes down, and we don't know if these two boys ever got back together or if this son ever respected his father ever again. We don't know. It just ends with the father scolding this son, pointing out to him, son, you've always been with me. You know, there are some logical things that we can think about concerning this situation. This boy's mad, but just think, because he hasn't asked for his inheritance, it just logically leads to the understanding that he's going to receive more. See, the father had to just kind of divvy up what was there at the time the younger son asked for his inheritance. All he could get is what the property, the land, the sheep, the cattle, whatever they had, what it was worth right then. That's all he was going to get. It's like, you know, you have a great need and you've got maybe a really good investment over here and that investment's just been going up and up and up. And you say, well, but, you know, we need to buy this or we need to send that child to school or whatever. And so you call your broker and you sell your stock. Well, it may go on up. It may double again. Well, you're not going to get the benefits of that because you sold out. This boy has actually lost a lot, this son that has come home. But this boy, this older son, is going to continue to receive the benefits of his father's kingdom, the benefits of his father's household and all that he has. And he's acting like, you know, you don't respect me, you don't love me, you've not given me a goat. I'm sure the father had no idea this was a desire that he had. That's usually the case. Fathers are not omniscient. Mothers are not omniscient. They don't always know what is in the hearts of their children. And as a result of that, then rather than getting angry, we ought to communicate. And so maybe that's something you need to pass on to your children. Just telling them, you know what? You can hint about things. We may not understand what you're hinting about. Tell us. Tell us what it is that you need. Tell us what it is. Just communicate with us when you have something that's going on. I can only imagine this father's absolute shock at the reaction of his older boy. That he's not reacting like everyone else in the household. In fact, really when you read about the servant who is answering the older son, what's going on in the house? And it's just strange to me. Why didn't he just go on into the house? It's his house that he's lived in with his father all of these years. Why didn't he just go on in instead of asking? He's already suspicious. We begin to see something of his mindset here. And the servant's happy. Your brother that's been lost has come home. We're celebrating about this. The servant's happy, but the brother is not. There are so many wonderful lessons that come out of this great context. One is we need to be concerned about the lost at all times. And all different levels of lostness. We've got to reach out to the people that don't know they're lost and try to bring them to Jesus. We've got to reach out to the people that simply don't know how to come home and try to bring them back to Jesus. And we've got to reach out to those who do know better and try to bring them back to Jesus. Those are some of the great lessons that come out of this wonderful parable. But we also see the parable of the older son. We must always keep in check our attitudes about those who decide to come home And it may be that they've done terrible things. It may be that they've done terrible things directly against you. But if they've come home and they've asked for forgiveness, and this young boy, remember, he was trying to ask for forgiveness. His dad kept interrupting him. The boy said, "Daddy, this is what I..." And the dad just goes ahead and takes care of him. That just shows you how much our Father loves us, how much He wants to do when we come back, how He cares about us. And so there's this stark contrast between the father's reaction and the older brother's reaction. There's a stark contrast between Jesus' love for sinners and the Pharisees' absolute hatred for them. They're repulsed by them instead of wanting to love them and wanting to help them and wanting to bring them back into the fold. They just want to reject them. They just want to leave them behind. And so that's one of the greatest lessons that we get from this, is what kind of attitude do I have? Almost invariably, when we do questions and answers at Central from time to time, somebody will turn in a question that says, "How do you forgive someone who will not ask for forgiveness?" Well, obviously, if they have not asked for forgiveness, you can't grant it, but here's what you've got to do as a Christian. You've got to be ready to forgive at all times. And that means I've got to keep my heart in check. And so as we look at this parable, when we listed what we were going to do today, we said, understanding my heart. Well, there are several hearts in this parable. There's the heart of the young man that woke up and realized, I've done wrong. And it may be that your heart's in that condition today and that you may need to make something right in your life. Wake up and come home. It may be that your heart is the heart of the Father. You may have someone who is lost that you love dearly. You're just dying for them to come home. You're ready. You're ready to forgive them. What a great heart you need to have in that situation. Or you may have the heart of the older son. You may be saying, well, even if they come back, I'm not going to forgive them. I'm not going to make it easy on them. They've lived in such a way that they've been out here doing this and that and the other, and here I've been faithful, and now they want to come home. Don't think that doesn't happen from time to time in the church. It does. There are brothers and sisters that, you know what it comes off as? That you're jealous that you didn't get out there and sin. Boy, what a horrible picture. I'm jealous that I didn't go out there and play around and do the stuff that I shouldn't have been doing, because then I could have had this great celebration when I came home. Last night we talked about dependability and being a faithful Christian who is dependent upon. That if anybody in the body of Christ, anybody in the congregation needs something done, they know they can depend on you. But you know, the dependable person doesn't always get the party, at least not here, because you rely on them all the time. They're always there. They're a rock, steady. But you know what? Even if we overlook them here, and we shouldn't, we have to always try to be encouraging. I know this congregation does something very similar to what we do at Central with the writing of encouragement cards, because I received a stack of them that thick last week. But that's a good way to take care of that problem and to write encouraging cards to people you know are so steady. They're always there, always ready to take care of anything that's going on. Well, let's be sure and encourage them in this life. But here's what's great. Even if they get overlooked in this life, when this life is over, they will not be overlooked. Do you remember the parable of the rich man and Lazarus? There's some interesting things about that parable. The Bible says the rich man died and was buried. And when he lifted up his eyes, he did so in torments. But it says concerning Lazarus, Lazarus was a leprous man laying outside the gates, just begging for crumbs, whatever he could get. But when he died, the Bible doesn't say anything about a burial. You know what they might have done with him? Now, I don't know where he lived. This is a parable. He doesn't tell us all of those details. But if he lived somewhere near Jerusalem, they probably dragged, unfortunately, his body out to the Valley of Hinnom and threw him on the fires. No burial. Nobody praising his name. Nobody saying, oh, what a good man. The Bible simply says he died. But then the next scene is so important. And he was carried by the angels into the bosom of Abraham. Didn't matter what he got here, did it? That mattered far more. Because this man was saved. This man had done what he was supposed to do. Didn't matter what his lot in life was, his stature in life, his class. What mattered was he had done what was right. And therefore he was carried by the angels to heaven. Rich man had a fine funeral, but he wakes up in hell. We need to be very concerned about how we treat our brothers and sisters here on this earth. And we need to be very concerned about how we treat those who are lost on this earth. And make sure we don't look down our noses as if we're better than somebody else. At one time you were lost. And someone might say, well, but I was being raised in a really good family and boy, we lived in a nice house. Who cares? When you're lost, you're lost. When you're lost, you're outside of Jesus. And every single one of us came to that point within our lives when we were outside of where we needed to be. And lost is lost. And thank God, He sent His Son to die for us so that we have the opportunity to come home and to be with Him forever and ever. God is the one who put the robe on. God is the one who put the ring on the boy. God is the one who put the sandals on his feet and killed the fattened calf. That's what heaven does when a sinner repents. And that's how we ought to react when a sinner repents as well. May God bless you as we have studied these three sets of parables this week. And I hope that you will take something from this that will be beneficial to your life. God bless.